We go to verse number 46. He says, what do I want to see? I want to see your form. What kind of form?
Kiritinan gadinan chakrahastam. Ichhami tvam drashtum aham tathaiva. Tenaiva rupena chaturbhujena. Sahasrabaho bhava vishvamurte.
So he says, I had enough of this. You know, enough of this thousand forms. You fulfilled my wish. Thank you very much. Now you can go. You came for a while. Thank you. Ab ja sakte. So he says, you can go. What I want to see, kiritinan gadinan chakram hastam. I want to see that form with the crown, kiritina, and gada, gadinam, with the mace. So he says, the form which has the crown, which has the mace. Mace is this weapon, and then chakra, which has the discus. And then, of course, you didn't mention the conch and the lotus, but that is understood. So he says, I want to see that pleasing form of the Lord that has four arms, that is carrying the chakra, that is wearing the crown, that has the conch, that has the flower, the lotus, and that has the mace, the gada. And that is the form I love, and that is my friend. Kiritinan gadinan chakram hastam ichhami tvam drashtum aham tathaiva. That all I want to see. I've had enough of this, you know, thousand and, you know, this whole universe. I cannot handle that. Again, what it shows is that he was not yet ready for the truth, you know, to experience that. And so the Lord showed it to him, but he was more comfortable in seeing Krishna as his friend, or seeing him as an incarnation of Vishnu. He knew that my friend is actually an incarnation of Lord Vishnu. So he's comfortable with that. So he says, Ichhami tvam drashtum aham tathaiva. That all I want to see. Then ichhami. Ichhami means I want to see. Drashtum means to see. That alone, tathaiva. Tenaiva rupena chaturbhujena. Chaturbhuja means the four arms. Rupa means that form. That form alone, tenaiva sahasra baho, thousand armed, bhava vishvamurte. Vishvamurte means the Lord of the whole universe. So you are the Lord of the whole universe. I have understood that. And that's what he has praised him from verse number 36. And I have understood that the whole consciousness is in, you know, you are that total consciousness. The whole world is in you. The sun and the moon and the stars and all the gods and goddesses and even the demons and the evil and the good and all the past, present, future, everything is you. But I don't want that anymore. You know, I cannot handle it. My mind is not ready. So I want to see the four-limbed form, because that is the form I love, that is the form I know, and that is the form and want to experience. And Gurudev in his commentary explains it very beautifully. This concept of Vishnu with the four arms, and he says he's blue and he has a yellow cloth. And if you look at Krishna also in that picture, he's blue and he's wearing a yellow cloth called a pitambar. So everywhere when you see Krishna, he's represented as blue and wearing a yellow cloth. And here also, Vishnu is blue, he's dark colored, and he's wearing a yellow cloth. And he has four arms. So what is the meaning of four arms? And what is the symbolism is explained very beautifully. I actually didn't know all this till I read the Gita in detail to prepare for this class. That's why I was telling Anamik also that teaching, I find, it helps me to understand some of the concepts that were not clear, and that's why I always thank, you know, all of you. I'm so grateful to have this opportunity, because then alone I would sit down and try to understand this. So they say the four arms represent the four antakarana, the inner personality of man. Because the inner equipment of man is called mana, buddhi, chit, ahankar. Mana means mind, buddhi means intellect, chitta means memories. Memories, whatever my past memories are, and ahankar is the ego, the perceiver, feeler and thinker, this limited ego. So the inner equipment of man, and we all have that. We have a mind, we have an intellect, we have memories, and we have ego. Mana, buddhi, chit, ahankar. So that is our inner equipment. So the four arms represent the four antakarna, the inner equipment. Now, why does he have dark body and yellow pitambar, or there also, why does he have a black or dark body and the yellow? So Swami Chinmayananda says that the dark blue represents the sky, because the sky is always blue. It's always blue, and the earth is yellow. The mud is yellow. So space or the totality or the consciousness is represented as blue and the earth is yellow. So when they say that the totality, the consciousness appears on the earth, either as Krishna or as Vishnu in Vaikuntha, it is blue covered by yellow, representing that the totality, the consciousness is temporarily limited by the yellow. That's why when Krishna appeared on earth, if you see in that picture, he used to be described as the dark blue boy, you know, dark boy of Vrindavan, and he used to always wear yellow clothes. So it represents that the total consciousness, which is blue, the totality, which is the sky. See, like the ocean is also blue, you know, which is infinite. The sky is blue. So anything that is infinite is represented by the color blue. So that totality, that blueness, that consciousness has temporarily been limited by the earth, by this body. You know, the body is called earth. It's called this the earth. So the consciousness limited by the body is blue and is covered by the yellow cloth. So that is the concept of that, that he is the total consciousness, but temporarily is limited by the yellow, which is the earth. So his body is equivalent to earth, right? Because we are made out of mud, we are made out of earth. So that is why. And the four arms represent the four, mana, buddhi, chit, ahankar, which means the Lord has four inner equipment and it controls all four, like the mind, intellect, memories and the ego. You and I, we are under the control of the mind. You know, one day my mind is happy, and one day my mind is sad, one day I'm depressed, one day I'm, you know, somebody praises me and I become so happy, and then somebody criticizes me and I get depressed. So you and I are under the control of the mind, but a wise person or the Lord, who becomes the wise person is like the Lord, has the mind under his control, the intellect, the memories, the ego. The Lord is not a victim of his mind or the intellect or the ego. And similarly, a realized master who has become one with that, somebody like Swami Chinmayananda or Shankaracharya or Jesus, they are not under the control of the ego, control of their mind and intellect. So which means that the Lord has the four arms. So the mind, intellect are under his control. Like in the, there is a song, you know, Main hoon sansar ke haathon mein, samsar tumhare haathon mein. It means I am a victim of the world, but you control the world. That is the Lord, between you and me, there is only a small difference. I am controlled by the world and you control the world. There is a very little difference. Actually, that is the whole Vedanta there. That the consciousness is the one that controls the whole universe. So that is the symbolic. So his four arms represent that he controls the mind, intellect, the ego and the memories. But you and I, we are not at that level, so we don't. Another meaning also which Swamiji gives is that the four instruments he has, the conch, the mace, you know, this gada, the lotus and that chakra, the discus, is also very symbolic. The conch, you know, because in all the Hindu temples in the morning, they blow the conch, you know, and they blow it loudly, which is inviting the people to come to the temple. Like even in the Muslim churches, you know, they go that bang deta, you know, that Maulvi on the mic, he's, you know, he gives out a call, everybody should come to church. Or like in the church, I mean, to the mosque. Or in the church, they have the church bells, you know, the bells ring, inviting all the faithful to come to church. So the conch is what the Lord uses to call us to Him. So anytime we are on the wrong path, so the Lord blows His conch. So the conch means, I am going on the wrong path. So He blows the conch. Now the conch is symbolic of the Lord's call. And it does not mean that I have to hear the conch. It means that He is sending me a message. Up to Sudarja, you know, change your ways. And we don't. You know, He sends, how does He talk to us? The Lord doesn't talk to us directly. He sends us these books. You know, read the Gita and you can change. Or He will send us saints like Swami Ishwarananda or Prabodhji or Gurudev, Swami Tejomayananda. So these great scholars and prophets come to us and tell us, you need to change your ways. What you are doing is wrong. And so that is the call of the conch. In fact, there is a book in the office called The Call of the Conch, which talks about this, that the Lord is calling us. So the conch means He is calling us through the saints, through the books, through His messengers. But when you don't listen, you say, I don't care. You know, these Mahatmas keep on talking. You know, they don't know the world. The world is different. You know, you have to be cutthroat to compete in the world. You have to step over the other guy and you have to destroy the enemy, and then only you can succeed. Whether you do fair means foul, you cheat, you hurt, doesn't matter. What matters is you win at the end, you know, win at all costs. Winning, you know, they say winning is not everything, it is the only thing. It doesn't matter how you win and how you crush the people. So you don't listen. So you keep on doing your evil ways, and the Lord keeps calling you, you don't listen. So what does He do? He hits you on the head with this gada. He hammers you on the head, which means you face some problem. Some problem will come if you are consistently going on the wrong path. If you are on the right path, eventually the Lord will come and save you. If you are going on the wrong path, some or the other danda you will get on your head. Some problem you will have. Either you will have family problem, work problem, health problem. Some sorrows will come to you. Why? Because of your own karma. It's not that the Lord is hitting you on the head, but it is your own karmas that are bringing the sorrow upon you. So you still don't listen. You say, okay, it happened, you know, this problem came, but I'm not going to change. Why? Because you are so fascinated by materialism, by wealth and by power, that no matter what kind of, you know, saints come and talk to you, say, it's okay, you want a donation, take it and go away. But don't bother me, you know, you want to build your mission, go ahead, but don't ask me to come to the lecture. So the Lord comes and again talks to you, you don't listen, then what does He do? He uses the chakra to cut your head. You know, then you are gone. That means this life you have done enough sorrows, enough tragedies, so you need to leave. Because you have caused enough suffering for the world, you need to leave and go ahead. Because ultimately, all evil people and criminals, they all are dead. Who knows? Who cares about Hitler or Mussolini or Saddam Hussein or, you know, all these, you know, criminals and these, you know, dictators and Hitlers? You know, nobody appreciates them. They are all gone. They have been killed, and their, you know, their name is even not looked at with respect. But Shankaracharya, who lived in the 7th century, is he dead? No. We still read his books. We still admire him. Buddha, he lived 25 years ago. There are more than a billion Buddhists. He's still alive. He's still alive through his books. You know, Jesus was 2,000 years ago. So the point is that these evil people, eventually they get killed. They get destroyed. Not only they get destroyed, but even their teachings, their ideas, their concepts get destroyed. The wise people prevail forever. So the Lord called you. You didn't listen. So He gave you first a little blow on the head. Then you don't listen. He cuts off your neck. He said, but how about if I do listen? You know, I don't want this blow on the head. I don't want this cut. He said, okay, then I give you the lotus. If you listen and come to me, I give you the lotus. The lotus represents purity. The lotus represents wisdom. Because in the Bhagavad Gita, many places, the lotus is used as an example of a wise person. It's So one place it says, Padma Patram Ivam Ambasa. Just as the water does not affect the lotus or the lotus leaf. The lotus or the lotus leaf grows in mud, grows in the filthiest ponds. If you look at the lotus, it grows in the filthiest of ponds, but when it comes out, so beautiful, it's so pretty, colorful. Not only that, but the lotus and the lotus leaf have a quality that if the water falls upon it, it slides off. You drop water on a lotus leaf. The lotus leaf has a particular oil covering that no matter how much water you throw on it, the lotus leaf never gets wet. Even though it is in water, it is not wet. So the wise person is described as a lotus. That means that living in the world, continuing to be in the world, he or she is unaffected by the world. Even though like the dirty mud and the water is there, but the lotus comes out of that dirty mud and water, but itself is not affected. Not only that, but the lotus spreads its beauty, its perfume, and the color and everything for the whole world to enjoy. So these Mahatmas are like that lotus that are born in the same world as you and I. You know, they have grown up in the same world, which is full of impurity and full of jealousy and full of anger and full of greed. But they have evolved to a state of the lotus where the world cannot affect them, but they can spread joy. They can spread message. That's why we worship the Mahatmas. That's why we adore them, because they are the ones that are like the lotus, who having, you know, they also took birth from the mother's womb like you did. They also walked on two legs. They also ate the same food. But why were they able to realize? Because they did not let the world, that's why they say, do not let the world come into you. Do not let the world enter you. You can live in the world, but do not let the world live in you. What it means is that you continue to do your duties, but do not let the negativities of the world affect you. You don't have to say, everybody does that, so it's, you know, it's okay. Like in India, they say, sabhi corrupt hain, toh theek hai. You know, everybody is corrupt, so we can also be corrupt. So that's why the lotus has a great symbolism, that it represents the truth, it represents the realized master, it represents the Lord. So that's why the four hands and the four instruments. So this four hands has many meanings of this whole form of Vishnu, with the blue, with the yellow cloth, with the four weapons, the four hands representing Antakarana. And so Arjuna says, I want to see that form. Actually, he doesn't say, I want to see that two-handed form of Krishna. He still wants to see Vishnu, and Krishna actually showed him that form. Krishna, see how much love he has. He says, I want to see the thousand arm. Okay, here you have it. And he shows him the whole thing, the whole universe. He said, okay, both of you. I want to see the forehand. Okay, you can see that. And then ultimately, of course, he becomes that. And that will be continued in this. So he says, Sahastra Baho Bhava Vishwa Murte. So he says, O you of the thousand arms, who is the support of the whole universe, you are the Lord of the whole universe. I don't want to see any of those. I want to see the forearm. I want to see you as Vishnu. He said, okay, you want to see me as Vishnu? So he shows him that. That is, we can end here. Any comments, any questions? Yeah, no, that's a very good question. Actually, the way to answer it is that, yes, there is a law of karma. You know, there is a law of karma. But there is also Lord's mercy, Lord's compassion. Because no matter what karmas you have done, good or bad, no matter how bad you are, if you approach him with love and surrender and ask for his forgiveness, he does shower you with his mercy. Or a person who is a devotee of the Lord, even though the greatest sorrows may be coming to him, if he or she goes to the church or temple and bows down and asks for the Lord's, you know, grace and mercy and forgiveness, he or she gets strength from the Lord to bear even the most horrible karmas they can bear. Like Jesus could cheerfully go through that, you know, crucifixion, because he approached the Lord and said, oh Lord, you know, why have you? Remember, he said, why are you? But then he approached. So So that is one aspect. So that's why the Lord's grace and mercy is important. It's not that he's an inanimate object just sitting there, not doing anything. But he has a lot of grace and mercy. And if you approach the, go to the Lord, it can be in your own house or it can be in the temple or the church. When you do that, it gives you a lot of inner strength, gives you a lot of peace. That's why chanting the name of the Lord is very helpful. And so there is a room for, you know, grace and mercy. And he can himself undo the karmas. Even though the law of karma has been created, but through his grace and mercy, that karma can become halka ho jata. It becomes easier to bear. It gives you more strength, it gives you more courage. And also what may happen is that even though the karma is bad, he'll send somebody to rescue you. He will send you a teacher or a neighbor or somebody to help you. So there is a room for Lord's grace and mercy. It's not only the karmas. The karmas are to a certain extent, but if you have that attitude of humility and attitude of love, then definitely even the greatest sorrows can be removed. In one place it says, Yasmin sthitona dukhena gurunapi vichalyate. A person who is established in the truth, even the heaviest sorrows come, they do not affect that individual. Because he knows that it's my body, I am not that. So he gives you that knowledge. Now you are asking, does God have qualities or does not have qualities? So God, you can understand God as Brahman, as that totality. And that Brahman has no qualities. In fact, this world does not even exist. This world is an appearance on that Brahman. And that Brahman has, actually there is no two. There is Advaita, there is only one. And so there is nobody for that Brahman to be merciful to or to relate to, because that Brahman is one and one alone. But then who is the God that gives us mercy, that creates us? We say that is Ishvara. That is the Lord. That is God that we worship. And Ishvara has three aspects. Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, the creator, sustainer and the destroyer. Now that Ishvara creates the world, it is that same consciousness, that's Brahman. When Brahman is identified with that individual, with you or me, then it becomes Anil or Barbara. So that same consciousness identified with an individual body, mind and intellect becomes the individual, the deluded individual, Anil or Barbara or whatever, Diana, whatever my name is. So that total consciousness identified with an individual becomes that individual. When that total consciousness is identified with the total ignorance, you know, the individual vasanas or ignorance becomes me. Because I am that local individual with that individual ignorance. But when the total vasanas of all the beings are considered, the plants, the animals, the birds, the fish, the humans, all the other species in all the other universes, when that Brahman identifies with all of them, it becomes Ishvara, the creator. And then using the power of Maya, which is the totality of all the vasanas, that power of Maya, he creates this world, which is an illusory world. You know, I mean, that is of course at the highest, at the level of Brahman, there's nothing happening. It's just a dream, just a play going on. It's like a drama, you know, has been created. For you and me, the drama is very real because we are still at the level of the ego. But when you get to the level of the realized master, then you will see that this world, in fact, those who are realized, they say this world is nebulous. It doesn't have too much reality for them. For you and me, it is very real because we are still lost in our ignorance. So that creator who has the mercy and who can bless you and give you, that is called Ishvara. And that you can call as Jesus or Allah or Father in Heaven or Buddha or, you know, Krishna or whatever name you want to give it. So that is the creator, sustainer and destroyer. So in that consciousness, there is actually no creation, no sustenance, no destruction. There is only that one, this is an appearance. Just as in that movie theater we have talked about, and the screen, there is no movie. The movie is just a succession of images happening, appearing and disappearing on the screen, but the screen is the support. and the movie is just a temporary appearance. So that is the concept of Ishvara, the creator, and Brahman, the consciousness. But actually they are one. It's not that Ishvara is separate from Brahman. They are just different ways of looking at the truth. So it depends on how much we are evolved. The level we are at, you can think, oh God, you are most merciful, you are kind, and I bow down to you, and please help me and support me and all, which is good. But as you understand the truth, then like Janak Maharaj in Ashtavakra Gita, he started out as an ignorant and he goes to the teacher and says, tell me the truth. Actually, if you read Ashtavakra Gita, that is a very advanced PhD text. And by the fifth or I think the eighth or tenth verse, he says, I am the creator of this whole universe. Janak Maharaj, who is a king, ordinary king, he says, I created this whole universe right from the blade of grass to Brahmaji, the creator. I am sustaining them all. So as the ordinary human, he says, I sustain all of this universe. They are all supported by me. What do you mean? It does not mean that king created the creator. What it means is that total consciousness, because he has become one with that consciousness. Having contact with the right teacher who gives him the right knowledge, he very quickly understands, nothing, this is all I created. By I does not mean I the king, but I the consciousness. Just as that pot cannot say I am that total space. As long as the pot thinks I am a pot, it will be limited. But once the pot knows I am space, then I am the pot space, I am the room space, I am the total space. So you have to change your vision. Spirituality is not that you suddenly stop doing what you're doing and put on orange clothes. I mean, if somebody has that desire, that's different. But the majority of us are going to continue to be a doctor, engineer, lawyer, student, but you just change your vision. That is all. So that's why you have to be very clear, which God are you talking about? Are you talking about the Brahman or the Ishvara, the totality or the creator? So he is all merciful, he is all compassionate, he is all loving, he is all kind. Everything what you say he is, it's all true. And that is the best, just approach him as that. At least even though I still, deal with him at that level, and it's fine. You still have a relationship of love and all that. There's nothing wrong with that. Because otherwise the ego comes in, I am that. And that is very dangerous. You have to be very cautious. Yeah. Anything else? Yes. Yeah, Maya is the power, but also Maya means that which is not.
Yeah.
Maya. So which is appears real but actually is not. So the Maya is the delusory power of the Lord which deludes us all. Like in the again Dakshinamurti, I keep quoting, he says, just as a magician creates this whole world, when you go to Las Vegas, so this world has been created. I think we can keep talking about it. We'll do that. It's too long, but the time is up. It's 12:15 to almost 12:20. So we won't be meeting for next 2 weeks because of Christmas and New Year. So we won't meet on the 23rd and 30th. We'll meet again on 6th of January. So we have 3 weeks off, but I'm giving you homework. So you have, first of all, finish this chapter. Even though we'll take our time to do it, but this chapter, the last two verses, I keep saying that, the last two verses are the most beautiful, yes. Because if you want to know a path to reach God, if you ask anybody, how many of you want to reach God? Everybody will raise their hand. Okay, there is a simple path in the last two verses, the verse number 54 and 55. So, but don't directly go to that. Read the rest of this chapter and then go to 54, 55. Because in very simple English, very simple Sanskrit, the Lord has given us how to reach Him. You want to reach Him, He says, this is the road, you take it, you will reach Me. We'll end with the closing prayer. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukkha Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah. Hari Om.